Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here at the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But right now, of course, we're waiting to get Joel Skousen, who's going to be with us on the line. And we'll be with you in just a moment here, and we'll be hoping to have Joel with us very, very, very shortly. And so Joel was on his way home. He's thinking here in about a couple of minutes. So let's just talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on in America today. And certainly one of them would be the move towards war. And, you know, the tragedy is that so many, many Americans today seem to take war as a, well, this is really not going to be much of anything. It's not going to affect me. Oh, it's going to affect those people. Oh, we feel so sorry for those people over in Iraq, but they'll be so glad to get rid of Saddam Hussein. Well, of course, remember, we've been bombing these people for the last 5 years on a regular basis. We've destroyed the infrastructure of the society. We've wiped out the middle class. Why did we do that? Well, because the wicked Saddam Hussein was in power. Why is the wicked Saddam Hussein in power? Because we left him in power in 1991, and then, of course, in 93, and again in 95, when the Iraqi military tried to overthrow him, we wouldn't let them do it. Now, if you want to verify that, a fascinating book, See No Evil, by Robert Baer, former station chief for the CIA in northern Iraq in 1995. But you're not going to hear about this because, you know, if you hear about it and you think about it, you have to ask yourself, well, if we kept Saddam Hussein in power in 1991, and of course we didn't back the Iraqi military when they wanted to overthrow him in 93 and again in 95, why are we so interested in taking him out today? And of course the question is there another agenda behind this war? And I would like to suggest that there really is. And with us on the line right now is Joel Skousen. Hi, Joel, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks, Dan. I got a little bit caught in traffic, so it was hard to get back home on time. Thanks for waiting for me.
Oh, well, we we don't have much choice, but it's so good for you to do this. And Joel came on rather short order. We had another program scheduled, and the guest had sort of, I think he forgot about the program. So Joel came on, and of course he, as you know, does the World Affairs Brief and publishes it on a weekly basis. Always something interesting there. So why don't you tell us what the things are that you are concerned about, that you think that our listeners should be thinking about?
Well, let's talk a little bit about Columbia tragedy here on the space shuttle. There has been, a typical rash of conspiracy theories that develop around any major accident, and so far I don't think there is any legitimate concern in that area, although the most disturbing photographs were coming out of the photographer who had...
We're going to have to interrupt you there for just a minute. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And with us today, of course, is Joel Skousen, publisher of World Affairs Brief. And we were going to be talking a little bit about the Columbia, the problem there. So why don't you go ahead and pick up the story? You were saying that there were some pictures that were a little disturbing. Why were they disturbing?
Well, both NASA and other people admit that the problems began approximately over the Sierras in California, well before it got to Texas. Of course, we're moving at a very, very fast rate of speed, so it was only a few minutes before it was over Texas. But an amateur astronomer who normally photographs space shuttles with long-range telephoto lens on his Nikon was there position in the Bay Area to photograph this one, and he did snap off several pictures with his Nikon 8. And what he showed, and, you know, he called the press. The press was there looking at his electronic images on his computer. It shows bright electrical flashing occurring around the track of the at the shuttle's passage. And it looks like an electrical discharge, like a huge, long lightning bolt intersecting. And at that very point when it's intersecting the track, there is a flash or orange light tinged in pale purple that affects the contrail or what's happening. And all of a sudden, the track of the Columbia starts to look thicker and more visibly white, as if something's and there's also a twisted, wobbly appearance to the contrail at that point.
But of course, isn't there always something as, you know, a tremendous flash as you know, as that as the shuttle actually comes into the atmosphere and there's tremendous heat? Is this something unusual as far as this photographer's point of view?
No, it's only unusual in the sense that, first of all, there's some wobbling showing up. Also, you know, it isn't something strange to see the what they call the aurora emanate from the shuttle as it impacts the atmosphere and starts to, in essence, explode at hyper speed. A lot of the atmosphere that's pushing around this big blunt bullet coming through the atmosphere. But the mere fact that this particular electrical appearing discharge interacts with that, and at that point you see a change in the Columbia's dim contrail, and it becomes more thicker and twisted. And twisting seems to indicate that something has destabilized the shuttle.
Okay, we're going to be back in just a moment here with our special guest today, Joel Skousen. All right, fine. Well, let's get back to Joel. And Joel Skousen, of course, publisher of World Affairs Brief, is with us today. And we're talking about, of course, the space shuttle. And, of course, there were some unusual appearances. But, of course, many of the people would say that the wobbling was maybe because one of the wings had fallen off because of course, this intense heat. Apparently, there's about a 3,000-degree heat. Some of the tiles apparently had fallen off one of the wings on the takeoff, something of the sort. I remember the discussion about the takeoff and some foam had hit in the wing. So obviously there were real problems with the space shuttle, which did not become apparent until it entered the atmosphere and this intense heat was generated. Do you think that there's anything, any reason to be suspicious of anything, or is this just one of those terrible, terrible tragedies that occurs because, of course, man himself and the things he builds are fallible?
Well, I am inclined that there is no foul play involved here, but and I want to discuss the state of the NASA investigation at this point. I've been watching and tracking the investigation very closely as the reports have come out from NASA, and there are some very interesting things that have developed relative to this wobbling. I don't think there's any way that we're going to be able to tell relative to this lightning bolt type photograph of whether or not this is real. I don't know how you duplicate this. I don't know what the altitude we're talking about in the distance of 39 miles, whether or not this photograph can ever be analyzed to determine whether or not it's been added on later or whether or not it's a real phenomenon. But let me cover the specific evidence about what's going on in relative to the tile issue. Obviously, any of those tiles that fall off, any tile, no matter how small, it's going to be fatal to the aircraft. Because at those 3,000-degree temperatures, you're going to burn through the underlying structure very, very rapidly. And once you start to burn through and the rest of the wing starts to explode, then it becomes a very unstable aircraft when parts start falling off. But interestingly enough, NASA says not only were the temperature sensors in the wheel well, which monitor the air pressure of the tire, as well as various other structural elements within the wing trying to monitor this heat. Before those temperature sensors were rising, and they did certainly indicate a rise in temperature, a very high and fast rise in temperature, which leads them to believe that there was a heat leakage there from the heat shield area. NASA says their telemetry also shows that the stabilization jets were firing well before that, indicating they were trying to stabilize an unstable aircraft. That to NASA means that there was something that was either hanging out on the left wing or in some way causing aerodynamic instability as it was entering that high speed in the atmosphere. And so a tile, they say, wouldn't explain that particular phenomena of the instability. They also indicate that foam coming off, and that's one of the reasons why they had discounted that early on, this foam insulation coming off the main fuel tank would and should never have been weighty enough or strong enough to be able to damage these tiles. They have, of course, done impact resistance on these tiles for many years. And foam just doesn't have the mass or the ability to crack or dislodge these tiles, and so they simply dismissed it out of hand.
What do you think that, you know, this is an aging craft. These have been around for a long time, and, you know, I'm sure that each time they enter the atmosphere, why, of course, there's a tremendous heat, and, you know, they think that maybe it was just the aging that predisposed this. Certainly there's been a lot of talk about the fact that there's been a lot of shortchanging of NASA over the last 10 years, and they really haven't had the money to do the repairs and the maintenance that maybe they should have been doing.
Well, I think when you're looking at a tile which has both a mechanical and a special adhesive compound to keep them on, it's almost impossible to tell whether or not they're getting ready to come off or not. And I think that's one of the problems with the design. It could have just been age and heat cracking of the connection bonding and combination bonding surface that allowed one of those heat shields to come off. It's very, very difficult to tell. One of the problems with the shuttle as well is that once you're coming down into a descent with that shuttle, you're committed. There's no way to get back to the space station. And so when something starts to happen, it's final. There's just no way around it. You can't glide up higher in orbit or, it just you're committed and you're going to turn into a fireball, and that's apparently what happened. So in short, Dr. Stan, I'm not convinced, anywhere near convinced, there's any foul play. I have no explanation for these coronal or lightning discharges. And by the way, these pictures have not been released to the public. This particular photographer has invited reporters from the San Francisco Chronicle to come to his home and view them, which they have, and they have reported on that viewing. But so far, they haven't been made public. I'm not so sure the government is going to allow them. The government has them in their possession now. So we may or may not know if this has any significance. I don't know of any particular phenomena that would explain this kind of high altitude. This is well beyond the atmosphere in terms of weather and lightning-type atmosphere. Whether or not there is some super-secret a discharge weapon out there. I mean, anything is possible in the world of science fiction. But we certainly don't have any terrorists claiming responsibility for this, so I'm inclined to discount it. But I thought I might bring it up as an interesting topic.
All right, fine. Well, what are some of the other things? I understand that you're working on a careful analysis of the President's State of the Union speech, and I think that really that was the most amazing speech. I mean, he's going to spend more for everything, and he's going to cut taxes, and everything's going to be fine. Well, you can't increase spending. You know, you're talking a $200 to $300 billion deficit without the war in Iraq, without rebuilding Iraq. And then, of course, we're going to increase spending for all these things. We're giving money to Turkey, and we're giving money to all these other countries we're bribing to support us. And then we're going to cut taxes. Talk about voodoo economics. That gives voodoo economics a bad name.
Yes, the State of the Union message is something I dedicated, and I usually don't do this because everyone expects this to be a lot of political fluff, but because it covered almost everything under the sun, in the typical jargon of the Republicans, where they pretend to be doing a conservative, fiscally responsible approach to the government, and when in fact this is anything but fiscally responsible, I thought it deserved a response. And another reason why I did was because the Republicans have responded with a knee-jerk enthusiasm and blind support for anything that Bush says. And whereas normally the Democrats would respond with a very scathing criticism of the Bush plan, theirs was a pathetic combination of maudlin appeals to minorities, Me Too yesmanship on Iraq, and kind of a we offer you more assertions regarding Bush's rather irresponsible and undisciplined spending proposals.
In other words, they both want, of course, government, the federal government, to control education. They both want to expand drug rights, prescription drugs for the seniors. They both are committed to the Medicare system, which is a failure and about to collapse. You know, both parties really are pushing big government. The Republicans speak out against it. The Democrats are openly honest. But both parties are really going the same direction. And, of course, committed to internationalism, to war, and to ever-increasing government spending.
That's right. I was particularly disturbed, however, by the increasing lack of what I call honor and dignity of Congress in allowing itself, through this mindless pomp and circumstance, be turned into a manipulating propaganda machine on behalf of a sitting president. I mean, here you have supposedly the most intelligent, respectful leaders of our nation acting like a bunch of high school cheerleaders in front of, mindlessly applauding and giving standing ovations at the drop of a hat. Why, U.S. classical music audiences are criticized for giving too many standing ovations.
Well, I think it reminds me of what one of our comedians, he said, you know, I don't make jokes, I just report on what happens in Congress. That was Will Rogers, but...
But in any case, what we're seeing here really is the art of the big lie being carried to extreme proportions here. We see the use of grand eloquence covering for grand lies. And I'm afraid when you do that on a systematic basis, the judgment of God for falsifying and dropping his name at the drop of a hat becomes very offensive to God, and his judgments can't be far behind.
Oh, I agree with you totally, and it's just so amazing that it's all right for the president to close his speech, you know, asking for God's blessing on our nation. And, of course, he's a government employee, and this is an official government action. So if it's all right for him to do it, why isn't it all right for a teacher to get up in class and ask for God's blessing on the class or even to mention the name of God? It's all right for the president to do it when he's getting paid, but it's not all right for a school teacher. There's something wrong with this scenario.
Well, of course, and but returning to what I was trying to say, the State of the Union address has become the epitome of manipulation and deception, being specifically contrived for these purposes alone, meaning it is contrived in order to simply sell a bill of goods to the American people and to manipulate public opinion. So it's important to kind of pick apart this thing, in all its dangerous fallacies. And that's what I'm attempting to do.
And that would be in your World Affairs Brief, and we're going to tell our listeners how to get that in a few minutes. And so what were the major fallacies that you saw?
Well, I think it's important to realize you have several different categories. One of them is just pure bravado. He starts out in saying that we're serving our country at a time of great consequence, and we will answer every danger and every enemy that threatens the American people. Well, there's no possible way that you can do that.
Well, I think, look at the applause he got, and of course, apparently the ratings from the American people were pretty good. People want to hear what they want to hear, whether it's true or not. We'll be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen, here on the American Freedom Network. Well, Dr. Stan, and this is the time I just want to mention a couple of the items that we have at Radio Liberty that we hope that you'll want to help with us with. And one of them, of course, if you are run down, we hope many of you will want to seriously consider getting the Be Alive Royal Jelly products. I've taken them for 10 years, as my wife, 8 to 10 years. And it's really, you take it just to get your energy level up and to maintain it. And I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I go into 11 o'clock at night. And I do take a little nap in the evening between this program and the next 2 hours that we do. But other than that, I go fairly well, and I think it really helps, and certainly an awful lot of people do, because the product is sold with a money-back guarantee. Now, it's not something you're going to take one pill or two pills or take it for a week and you're going to feel better. You're going to take it actually for a month, for 3 months. And if at the end of 3 months you don't feel considerably better, you don't really think your energy level is better, why, you call them and they'll refund your money. The telephone number is 866-233-7500. That's 866-233-7500. The product is Be Alive Royal Jelly. And then, of course, we want to mention to you about the Elemax, which is, of course, a garlic product.
Roberts, this is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi to talk to you about a breakthrough in garlic technology. It's called Elemax. You know all the healthy reasons to take garlic, but isn't it time you got your money's worth? A recent study found that 24 leading brands of garlic pills provided little, if any, allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient. Try Elemax, which is the only odorless garlic supplement to provide pure allicin, a full 180 milligrams. That's the power of 15 fresh cloves of garlic. Elemax isn't available in stores, so call 866-405-4000. That's Elemax at 866-405-4000.
All right, and this is Dr. Stan. And then, of course, let me mention the Miracle 2 soap products, which we sell, and we hope, of course, that many of you out there in the listening audience who want to get them. We can't make any medical claims for Miracle 2 products, but we can tell you an awful lot of our listeners who have used them feel that they really have helped them. There's a soap and a moisturizing soap. There is a neutralizer, and it's something you just take by mouth, and some people feel it helps them with their heartburn. I know my wife takes it. She thinks it helps. And then, of course, there's a lotion and a gel. And you can get all five products for, $74.95. It's a special reduced price. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV or ask for Miracle 2 soap products. And if you like, just try one, but you can get the introductory offer. And that gives you a chance to use all of them. And I will tell you, most of our business is repeat business, people coming back again and again. And then, of course, if you have children or grandchildren in government schools, we hope many of you will give serious consideration to actually getting the Phonopoly. And Phonopoly is a board game. It's played very much like Monopoly. And it's designed to teach children how to read phonetically, how to spell phonetically, how, of course, to pronounce words phonetically. And so many young people today have real problems as far as their reading is concerned. Really, it's frightening to see what an effective job the people who would destroy this nation have done in dumbing down the American people and depriving them of their ability to read. So if you love your children and grandchildren, give serious consideration to getting a Phonopoly set. That's Phonopoly. Most of these programs sell for $300 or $400. This is $139.95. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5. HIV war, because we are at war today. Well, Dr. Stan back here at our Radio Liberty, our guest here is certainly Joel Skousen, and he publishes World Affairs Brief. Joel, how can people get World Affairs Brief?
World Affairs Brief can be read about on my website, www.joelskousen.com. That's spelled joelskousen.com. And if people don't have access to the internet, they can call my office when I'm not on an interview like this at area code 801-224-4746. Send a there's a print edition of the World Affairs Brief that comes out monthly, and you can get samples of them from calling my office number.
All right, and of course, I read it every week when it comes. Now, let's go on. Todd, is there anything else as far as the president's speech is concerned, other than the fact that he is determined to go to war? It doesn't matter. We are going to war, it seems, no matter what Saddam Hussein does, and no matter what the United Nations does, and no matter what the rest of the world does. I was surprised to see that some of the European countries, Spain and Italy and Czechoslovakia, and I think Hungary and Great Britain, and I think Denmark now, are all at least appear to be on board. Are they really on board, or are they simply they're trying to convince the American people they are?
Well, there aren't any of the American or the European peoples as a whole that support a war with Iraq. Polls run 70 to 80% against a war in Iraq under any circumstances. The leaders do tend to go along with pressure politics, especially when you don't even have Russia or China, Iraq's natural allies, defending Iraq. It appears as if that they're going to be willing to sacrifice Iraq specifically in order to help the United States make or itself look bad. In other words, they're sticking out the foot and saying, well, you want to trip yourself, United States, and make yourself look like the bully of the world, we're going to allow you to do that. And I think Iraq is going to be sacrificed for that purpose. The biggest thing that I point out in my analysis of his speech relative to the Iraq situation is that he goes into this long litany of intelligence information about weapons of mass destruction that Iraq has had, and then said, and Iraq has never accounted for these things, it won't explain to us where they are, and it has not given us any indication of where these things have been disarmed. And this is patently untrue. In the first place, at least 40 to 60% of those weapons listed by President Bush were openly declared and found out by the inspection regime between 1991 and 1995 and were removed or destroyed in Iraq. Other weapons of mass destruction have been monitored, or at least the transfer of those have been monitored by satellite photos, and the U.S. has those satellite photos in hand showing huge military convoys going to Syria where those weapons of mass destruction, mostly chemical and biological weapons. We have no firm knowledge of any nuclear devices in Iraq whatsoever, though we understand they have been attempting to get a nuclear weapon for many years. But the important point is the body of evidence in terms of existing weapons has an answer even in the hand of U.S. intelligence, and that is that it's been transferred to Syria. And the U.S. fails to do several things. One, it fails to blow the whistle on Syria, allows them to join the Security Council as a voting member. It refused to interdict those shipments, even though it had many, many photographs of these long armored columns going into Syria. It failed to interdict and inspect those, of which was the U.S. right at that time. So it almost appears, when you know the other side of the story, that the United States was setting Iraq up for this excuse to have an attack. And that's what my major objection is to the rush to war, is that the U.S. has not been sincere in disarming Iraq where they could have interdicted.
Now, how long ago was it that they transferred over to those weapons over to Syria, do we know?
These have been taking place over the last 4 years.
And do you think these are chemical and biological weapons that they're talking about?
Well, I think most assuredly, because that's where the major stockpiles were. Nobody has any proof of any real nuclear weapons or nuclear material in the hands of Iraq. They can't find any radiological evidence in the inspectors, but they do have evidence and admissions of Iraq of thousands of liters of these particular items. And these convoys have been sealed going to Syria. So the U.S. would have had to interdict these at the border with Jordan or in Syria, which they failed to do. And that's inexplicable, given the sense that the U.S. has supposedly been very anxious to disarm Saddam Hussein.
Well, you know, Joel, the problem is that nothing is as it appears to be. Everything, you know, there's always something going on behind the scenes, and that's the big problem we face today, is that our leaders are not being forthright with us. There is another agenda behind everything going on. We'll be right back here with Joel Skousen. And this is Dr. Stan coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And this is the time, of course, when we want to remind you that Radio Liberty supported. We're really dependent upon those of you out in the listening audience who believe in what we're doing to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day by radio, 5 hours every day on the Internet, 3 hours a day on satellite, 2 hours a day on shortwave, and we have a unique opportunity to reach people and to try to get them to understand what's going on. Now, of course, now our big effort right now is to try to actually syndicate our programs and get them onto satellites so other stations can begin to pull them down. And we're working in that direction. And, of course, quite frankly, we could use your help. Because we need to reach as many people as we can in the time that God is still giving us. And so if you believe, as I do, that we are really involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, that the battle is truly has to do with biblical prophecy, it has to do with this eternal battle between good and evil. And, of course, the church is not addressing this at all. It's telling us, oh, we don't have to be involved. God's involved in charge of everything, and he is bringing about all these abortions because that's what he wants, and he's bringing about partial abortion, and the Christians don't have to be involved, totally ignoring Christ's admonition that we are to occupy, we're to be involved in the affairs of this world until he returns. And I believe that, of course, I would not want to stand before the very gates of heaven and be asked what I had done with, of course, the gifts that God had given me. And I would like to be able to say I've done my best. But an awful lot of Christians don't feel that way. Once saved, always saved. I don't have anything to worry about. I don't have any responsibility. I know all the Bible verses, but, of course, when people are being slaughtered in other countries, when 40 million people were systematically starved in 1959 and 1960 and 1961 over in communist China, with the full support, of course, of our administration, which had brought the communists to power in China, of course, the average American wasn't concerned. Where was the outcry in America when they slaughtered, 800,000 Christians in Rwanda? Well, there's so many things going on today we never talk about. If you believe there's a problem, we hope many of you will join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, which deals with a very real threat of biological warfare in America, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Consider getting Dr. Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, or our four-tape interview with him, Life-Saving Secrets, and order them right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest today is Joel Skousen. And Joel, go ahead and continue with your thoughts there.
Well, I'd like to return to the basic problem of President Bush's speech, and that is to actually engage in a big lie psychology, and that is that he understands that he really isn't promulgating a conservative, smaller government agenda. And yet when a person knows that and then blatantly says right up front, I am doing everything right, I'm doing precisely what he knows he isn't doing, this becomes a big lie. For example, he has a grandiose statement in paragraph number 4 where he says, this country has many challenges. We will not deny, we will not ignore, we will not pass along our problems to other Congresses, other presidents, and other generations. Now, this statement is so patently untrue and knowingly deceptive that it must be analyzed. How can a president say we're not going to pass along our problems to other generations and then proceed to give a $2.23 trillion budget with a bare minimum of $300 billion deficit and saying I'm not passing my problems on to the next Congress and the next generation?
You're saying there's going to be at least a $300 billion deficit, and that probably is a gross understatement.
The reason I say that is that in this very same talk, he talks about saving Social Security, and yet he doesn't even have the honesty to not dip in this very year of his budget proposal to the Social Security Trust Fund.
In other words, they're stealing all the money this year, just as they have last year, and they have for the going back to the time of Lyndon Johnson. There's no money there. They've simply stolen the money and given government IOUs, which there's no money to redeem them with.
And people need to understand what the volume of this money is. It's at least $300 to $340 billion a year they take out of the Social Security Trust Fund. That's how much cash is generated from Social Security. Do people understand the magnitude of that? Is that the Social Security Trust Fund each year generated through tax receipts equals the income tax?
No, they really don't. In fact, certainly they're not going to learn about it from the New York Times or from the Wall Street Journal, either one, a supposedly conservative or liberal publications. And the average American really doesn't understand that this is how you steal from future generations. So to say that you're not going to leave a problem for future Congresses, where are they going to get the money to fund the elderly, 20 years from now? We're talking about basically a $20 trillion, maybe even as high as $23 trillion, the benefits that they have now pledged to offer, and there's no money to pay them.
I mean, to put this into perspective, Stan, he's claiming that his particular budget, which is very conservatively estimated at $300 billion, now that doesn't take into consideration the fact that he's eating up the trust fund. So let's say it's over $600 billion, the knowing deficit, and it doesn't count the war in Iraq. And I heard Ari Fleischer talking about this on the news as I was coming to this interview, and he was talking about, well, we really don't know if we're going to war or not. That's why this isn't in the budget. And he says, if perchance we are forced into this war, I mean, this is what President Bush used in the State of the Union speech, is that we're being forced into this war. I mean, that's the most disingenuous, evil statement. Why, he talks about, if this isn't evil, what is? Well, if this is truth, I don't know what truth means when you make statements like the United States being forced into war with Iraq. It just begs the question. But in any case, the war in Iraq would cost at least $200 billion and $400 billion over the life of rebuilding Iraq. We're talking about another $1 trillion in deficits this year.
Well, a trillion here, $1 trillion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. Let's go to Ed calling in from Aptos. Hi, Ed. Did you have a question or comment?
A brief question, Dr. Stan.
Right.
Joel, I heard today that each space shuttle mission costs $1 billion with a B, $1 billion each time they go up. Is that true? And what good does that do the American people, those space shuttle missions?
Well, I think the only way you could get up to that $1 billion figure is if you amortized all the other production and development funds into and divided it between these missions, because the actual cost of the mission itself, is only about half of that. But I think that's probably correct when you look at the overall NASA budget. I personally don't think that this level of human life and exploration is worth the taxpayer funding. I'm very much opposed, and yet there's a knee-jerk reaction out there among virtually every commentator in the establishment news media that we've got to throw more money at this. Bush just proposed an increase in the NASA budget. They proposed, we can't let these people die in vain. We've got to throw many more billions after it. I think it's we're heading for a crash of America in terms of economic and deficit spending. I just think this is a fool's paradise that America's living in, that we can simply keep throwing money at something, no matter what it is, and there don't seem to be any consequences.
Well, how is building the space station and what we're doing now really improving the life of the average American? I don't think it is, and I agree with you. I think this is a boondoggle. It's always been a boondoggle, and nobody wants to say it any more than anybody wants to say the king doesn't have any clothes on.
There have been some technologies from the space program which have become much cheaper and more readily available within society. So they can always point to those types of things, but if you look at the cost of developing those technologies, they have become the most expensive development process ever. I still believe you could have developed them directly in private industry without using the public purse in that regard.
All right, we've got Herman calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Very good. I heard a couple of things. First of all, when NASA gave their news conference, they said, we do not know what caused this accident, but we absolutely know it wasn't terrorism. So that was very interesting. Also, there are some people that have written about Tesla scalar weapons, and there was a question raised, could this have been an attack using a scalar Tesla-type weapon, especially in light of the sonic boom, which supposedly is associated with this type of weapon use?
My response is, yes, although that kind of technology is out of my field of expertise, but clearly this lightning bolt photographed could have been a scalar Tesla-type weapon between a couple of satellites positioned between the in the flight path. The sonic boom is not definitive in terms of evidence because the shuttle itself at that speed makes various sonic booms at periods of time during its entry. But I'm still open to whatever may be there. I think, as I say, this photographic evidence is the best so far that there was something intersecting the flight path of the Space Shuttle Columbia.
Okay, anything else, Herman?
Well, one final thing. I'll be interested to see what David Myers in the Last Trumpet newsletter has to say about the fact that the shuttle broke up over the home state for our president, Texas.
All right, fine. Thanks so very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, I think that what we can say is we don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. It's very easy, of course, to attribute everything to a conspiracy, and sometimes there just are acts of God, and maybe that's what it was. Time alone is going to tell us what it was. I think that although this is a terrible, terrible tragedy, we're saying, oh, we've got to throw another couple of billion dollars at it, or these people have died in vain. Well, you know, maybe, you know, if we just stop this whole shuttle, nobody else is going to get killed, and are we really going to get that much benefit out of this? It's certainly not going to improve America's military position because, of course, we're building it right along with the Russians. We're sharing this with the Russians. We financed the Russians' participation in this. They never could have got their space program going without massive financial aid from the United States. There's no race for space. We're simply subsidizing the enemy who has difficulty doing these things on their own without our financing and technology. And I'm not certainly, other than maybe if we keep our eyes on the sky, we're not seeing what they're doing here in America to us.
Yes, I'm sure I wouldn't want to be one of those astronauts waiting up there to use the Soyuz escape vehicle, which is essentially a space capsule that comes down and burns its way through the environment to a landing in the ocean. That's got to be done with a little bit of trepidation, knowing that the Soviets have had a variety of failures in their space missions, all of which went unreported in the press.
All right, fine. Well, is there anything else you want to cover as far as the president's speech, other than the fact that he seems to be determined to take us into war, even though the United Nations has not yet given him their permission? I think there's a serious question whether they will. And I don't believe in the United Nations. I don't believe that, you know, necessarily that we should be subservient to the United Nations. But since they seem to be paying such homage to the United Nations, and then up to the certain point, and then they finally say, we don't care what they say, there's such inconsistency. Inconsistency would be the term, and I think you would use, we've got to go to the United Nations, get their permission, get the resolutions. We don't like your resolutions, we're going to do it anyway.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of this hypocrisy involved here. One thing that comes to mind, if I'm trying to scroll down through the speech and find it here, it has to do with the fact that the United States says we're, of course, going to go it alone. We don't have to wait for any coalition on this aspect, and yet it's very interesting that relative to the North Korean situation, the day of that or day after the State of the Union speech, she made some statement that when North Korea had said, you know, this is between us and the United States, we want to have direct dealings, and suddenly the U.S. says this has nothing to do with national security with the United States. You'll have to deal with the international community on this. And yet they turn around in the same sense and they say Iraq is a personal threat to the United States, and therefore we will deal directly with Iraq regardless of the United Nations if necessary. So they use one side of each coin depending on which suits their fancy. You notice in the Gulf War they said we don't have to, let's say we must have an international coalition. Bush said we must have UN permission to go in there and attack Iraq. And then in the Kosovo situation, they said, we don't need UN permission. We can go in and intervene directly in this country. I mean, they virtually used the same excuse for one side of each issue. And the American people don't seem to pick up on this grand dichotomy.
Well, I don't think the American people don't realize how horrible wars are. But men and women become accomplices of the evils they fail to appeal to oppose. And if we go in there and a lot of men and women and children are killed, you know, and then, of course, what's our justification for it? Well, we don't want Saddam Hussein to get weapons of mass destruction. I'm sure he has them. I'm sure that they've been sent out of the country. And then, of course, my fear is that if Saddam faces defeat, the first thing he's going to do is attack Israel with those weapons. And, of course, this could have terrible implications, as certainly the terrorist threat to America and the threat of biological weapons attack on this country, because Saddam Hussein would have absolutely nothing to lose if he was going to be killed anyway. And not only that, but maybe, just maybe, the war would be used as an excuse for a biological attack on America. It might not come from Iraq at all, but, of course, everybody would think it was. That would be the perception.
It certainly would be easy to pin the blame on Iraq, just as the Bush administration was so quick to point to the Afghanistan as the source of this attack on 9/11, when there's really no definitive evidence. Most of these people were Saudis, for example.
Right, and of course,
if we can believe who they say perpetrated the attack, which I think is suspect also.
Well, of course, the major thing is, if we were to believe what we're told, 15 of the 17 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia. We know that many of the people within the hierarchy of Saudi Arabia have been financing al-Qaeda, and when, of course, there was an effort on the part of the families of the victims of 9/11 to bring a lawsuit against Saudi Arabia so the facts could be brought out, and, of course, these key people in the Saudi government could be tried. Our government did everything they could to oppose the suit and has effectively blocked it. Let the truth come out. Let the American people find out that the Saudis weren't involved, that the princes weren't involved in financing Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. Then the truth will come out. Why are they trying to conceal the truth from the American people? And if there's nothing to hide, why are they hiding it?
I think one of the important things that we need to keep in mind about all the supposed links to al-Qaeda is that we know virtually nothing about al-Qaeda except through the U.S. government, which created and funded both Osama bin Laden and the al-Qaeda network, which was essentially came from the Mujahideen out of Afghanistan.
Now, I think for our listeners who'd like to verify what Joel just said, the book Dollars for Terror, written in 1999, certainly the book Unholy Wars, written by John Cooley, reported from the Christian Science Monitor in 1999, on Holy Wars. Both of those tell you exactly what Joel just said, including the fact that we financed the Taliban. But, of course, nobody ever wants to talk about that, and except they've forgotten that that George Bush, President Bush, on his speech on the 20th of September of 2001, just 9 days after the attack, said, "We are the largest source of humanitarian aid for Afghanistan," which really meant we were financing the Taliban.
One other thing before we run out of time, I want to emphasize there has been a piece of disinformation floating around, and we discussed it first on your program last Friday.
Well, let's clarify that.
Which was this information claiming that Defense Minister Ivanov of the Russian Defense Ministry came on national television in Russia, interrupting all programming, saying that Russia is going to come into this war on the side of Iraq. They must stop this U.S. bullying around the world and this U.S. aggression. Now, obviously, it's been my theory that this is what the Russians intend to do sometimes, so I was interested in seeing if this really was the trigger event that may cause Russia to come out of its phony demise posture, playing weak, so to speak, and attack the U.S. as I have predicted they are preparing to do. But I said to myself, the only way that this could be true, it certainly would show up in Russian media, because even though the disseminator of this post to the Yahoo News Group, supposedly an expatriate in American living in Russia, said that the Western media would try to suppress this, you can't suppress something like this in Russia if, in fact, the defense minister had interrupted national television. What's the purpose of suppressing it if everybody was watching television and saw it happen? True to form, the next day, as I checked every Russian news media source, Russian and English, there was nothing about it, not a hint, not a whisper.
In other words, this is part of the disinformation, the battle on the minds of the American people, to give them so much contradictory information, we don't know what to believe.
Well, it's very important because it's hard for most Americans to check out a story like this when it comes from somebody living in Russia. I mean, this is a true big lie. How could he be lying? He was saying something that would be obviously untrue if he was saying it was interrupting national TV and it didn't really happen. Well, he was taking advantage of the fact that nobody in America watches Russian TV and wouldn't know.
Right. Well, that's why we have to depend on you to keep us on top of all of these things, Joel.
Well, it is continuing to spread in the Internet, so anytime any of your listeners hear this rumor, just tell them this has been debunked long ago. This did not happen.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so very much for being our special guest here, and God bless you. We'll look forward to having you back on our programs in the not-too-distant future.
All right. Thank you, Stan.
Bye-bye. And again, this has been Joel Skousen, his publication, World Affairs Brief, and you want to get it, you want to read it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is the time when we just certainly want to mention some of the various products that are available through our ministry. And one of them, of course, is this wonderful new book by Dr. Russell Blaylock. It's called Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And if you have not read it, why, let me recommend it to you. Basically, Dr. Blaylock goes into the background of the mercury in your fillings, the mercury that they've been giving to our children in the vaccines, and they knew it was toxic, and they knew it was affecting their brains, and they knew there was a very definite relationship between the vaccines and autism, and they did it anyway. And now, of course, you'll be very pleased to know that we've actually, of course, given a free ride to the to Eli Lilly and the drug companies so that they cannot be sued for harming our children. And, of course, there's a federal fund, but, of course, tried suing the federal government. And, of course, have lots of patients because it's almost impossible to do. So certainly the book goes into the background of mercury, and then it goes into the fluoride. Do you realize that fluoride, of course, is used to decrease the sperm motility, decrease testosterone levels in men, and the whole purpose is as a fertility drug. And that's why the CDC is so intent upon getting the fluoride into water all across America. There are too many people in the world, and this is a means of cutting the incidence of the population. And then, of course, there's a section in the book on bioterrorism and what you can do to actually build up your immune system. The book, again, is Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And we recommend that you give serious consideration to getting the book. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, WAR. And then you want to get the tape set that goes along with it. It's called Life-Saving Secrets. It's four interviews with Dr. Blaylock. And as we go through all of the various things that you can do to build up your immune system, and there are lots of things that you can do. You certainly should be taking large doses of vitamin C and have these on hand and put them into a refrigerator and so that they will be there for some time, because, of course, we get into a problem, you're not going to be able to run down to the health food store and buy all of these things. And, of course, vitamin E and certainly zinc and selenium and magnesium, all of these help to boost your immune system. And then, of course, garlic. And there's a number of other things that you can actually take, echinacea, that will tend to boost your immune system if there were to be a biological attack. I don't know whether there's going to be or not, but you certainly better begin preparing yourself for that eventuality. And we recommend the book to you again, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, we're actually running a different routine as far as our timing is concerned. We're hoping, of course, to get this program onto satellite. So if you don't mind, we're sort of experimenting with you, and we're going to learn how to do this before we actually do put the program up on satellite. And so sometimes we may have a little bit more in the way of advertising. Hopefully, as we get into the program a little bit more, this won't be a problem. So let me just suggest to you, if you're not already a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, why don't you consider joining the Radio Liberty family, because that's how we're able to do what we do. And, of course, for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do, and that is reach out across America 5 hours every day. And, of course, hope you maybe you'd like to just go ahead and subscribe to the newsletter. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, well, our October newsletter, of course, is Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Her husband, Ron, died in the South Tower, and you really want to read what she said about what happened on September 11th. When she testified, why, of course, the reporters were there, the video cameras were running, and the media almost totally suppressed what she said. Why would they do that? And, of course, because they figure most of you aren't going to get up on the web. Well, we went up on the web, and we brought down her testimony. And, of course, if we reproduce that in our October newsletter, and we'll be glad to send you a copy free of charge if you just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARP. And then, of course, if you'd like to get a copy of our latest newsletter, it's the January newsletter, which is just being printed up now. It really deals with the threat of biological warfare. Is there a threat of biological warfare? Are they just trying to scare us to death? Is this a diversion? Or is there more to this than meets the eye? And then, of course, what would you do if there was a biological attack? What sort of attack would it be? Would it be some sort of a genetically altered organism for which there'd be no treatment? Would it be a conventional organism? Well, we are not going to give you all the answers because we're going to be dealing with this over a period of several months, but I think our January newsletter will give you a good overview of what's going on. And if you'd like a free copy of our January newsletter and you haven't had a copy before, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll send you our January newsletter. And I think that you'll get a real feeling for what's going on behind the scenes and how we're constantly being manipulated with threats of terrorism. And yet, of course, there is a real threat of terrorism. After all, we haven't tried to close our borders. Our borders are still open. It's estimated that we've had almost 1 million illegal aliens enter the United States since last year. Now, we have enough money to build a big high fence between Afghanistan and Pakistan, but we don't have enough money to build a fence to keep out the illegal aliens from south of the border. Read the articles in the paper. Every time we talk about sending illegal aliens home, why they're doing everything to pull on your heartstrings. These poor people who've come in here illegally and, of course, are working, and some of them are terrorists. Many of them have no use for America at all. They're simply here for secondary gain. Some of them want a better life, admittedly. But, of course, when we reward the people who come here illegally, why, of course, we tend to detract from the people who have come legally. And then you have to understand that there's a great deal of money being put up by the Ford Foundation and very wealthy people to finance the illegal alien movement. Why would we do something like that? What's really going on behind the scenes that most people don't understand? Well, that's why, of course, you need to get our information. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, let me suggest you get it. And, of course, you can get Brotherhood of Darkness for $12.95, or you can get the Brotherhood of Darkness special with the book, the video, and the audio tape for $29.95. And when you read it, you'll begin to understand the spiritual battle that we're engaged in. Pray for America and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And this is Dr. Stan. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.